I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome back to Kiwi Birth Tales. I am your host, Jordan. I am a mum of two. I have Jai, who's 3.5, and Ali, who is 20 months old. And I also have a business baby, which is your birth project. If you are pregnant right now, you need your birth project in your life. So make sure you go and check that out. Today's episode is a little bit of a different one. I've never had this on the podcast before, which is exciting. I recorded an episode with the beautiful girls from Mother Unrefined, and this episode is available on their podcast, but I also wanted to make sure it was available on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast because I know lots of you come here when you're pregnant, and I just think that the podcast episode that I did with them is so valuable to your pregnancy and your birth prep and your birth planning. So I hope that you love the episode. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to send me an email, Jordan with a Y, J-O-R-D-Y-N, at kiwibirthtales.com, or find me on Instagram at kiwibirthtales or at yourbirthproject. Okay, let's jump into the episode. I hope you enjoy.
Before we jump into today's episode, we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community.
We pay our respect to their elders, past, present and future, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Now let's jump into the episode.
It's an experience that we've heard probably for our whole lives that is going to be so painful. And we watch movies and these women are like on their backs and they're screaming and it's this massive, like, you know, ordeal. And everything that the media or a movie or a TV series has ever portrayed about birth has been traumatic without us even sort of realizing it.
Hello and welcome to Mother Unrefined, a podcast brought to you by two old friends
and ex-business partners who have reignited their flame over motherhood. I'm Jess Frank.
And I'm Nicola Scrooby.
And we're your hosts. The aim of this podcast is to make every woman who listens feel less alone on her journey to and through motherhood, however that may look.
Quick disclaimer before we jump into today's episode, we won't be watching our language.
Hello, welcome back to Mother Unrefined. My name is Jess.
And my name is Nicola, and today is a very relevant episode.
To us.
Yeah, sorry guys, we're being selfish for this one, but
yes.
We've done an episode on hypnobirthing before, haven't we?
We have touched on it. We've spoken with the modern doula. She spoke about it a little bit as well, and we can link that episode in the notes as well. I think we spoke a little bit about it with Millie Poppins in one of our first episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is more of a deep dive.
Yeah, this is a deep dive, and we also share some of our own experiences, which I think it's always nice to hear other people's experiences. But the one thing that I really liked about this episode is that Jordan, who we're interviewing, she's really into hypnobirthing as like it's not just about avoiding intervention, it's about embracing intervention if it occurs and what you can do to help you, I guess, manage that mentally and physically.
Yeah, that's beautifully said, actually. So, yeah, so she is a qualified hypnobirthing instructor. She has an online course called Your Birth Project. So that is available, obviously, around the world. The price point is ridiculously good, can I just say?
Very good.
Very good. So I think a lot of the time hypnobirthing courses can be hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I think mine was when I did it. This one is accessible to pretty much everybody, and you have it for a full year. So I think once you kind of get an understanding of what hypnobirthing is, it takes away the sort of woo-woo-ness of it, and you can really become empowered in your birth. Okay, well, listen, this episode got us pumped up again for birth. Hypnobirthing, we've both used it before. We're excited to use it again for this birth. We really can't recommend it enough. Please, everybody, jump on. have a look at your birth project, because hypnobirthing really does change the perspective of the birth, makes it so much less daunting and gives it's you the woo-woo. Power.
It's not yeah. all woo-woo. Some yeah. are, but this one isn't. So let's start.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you for joining us today. Before we get started, would you mind just telling us a bit about yourself, who's in your family, and what it is that you do?
Sure. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. I am Jordan. I am a mum of two. So I've got two sons. Their names are Jai and Ali, and they are 3 and 1.5. So it's a busy little household over here. We live in Papamoa, which is in the North Island of New Zealand, and I do a couple of things, actually. So I've got Your Birth Project, which is one of my businesses, and it is an online hypnobirthing course. It's also an online store for pregnancy, birth, and postpartum related products, and I've got a beautiful little journal as well, which is pregnancy and birth focused. And then I also have Kiwi Birth Tales, which is a pregnancy and birth podcast hosted here in New Zealand, and talks about all things, yeah, pregnancy, birth, and motherhood with Kiwi mums and dads, which is amazing. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Wow, you do have your hands full. I can't believe that gap. So is that a
yes. 21 months between them. Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And two boys as well. I've got two boys coming. Well, in a week, second boy coming. So How is it with two boys? Is it all right?
Oh, it's yeah. I'm gonna tell you yes because you're going for it. No, it's so cool. And we didn't like plan on having such a close age gap. Ali, our second, was a happy surprise. But yeah, they're such cute little friends now, like growing such an awesome bond, and they fight like cats and dogs, but they also, yeah, they have a beautiful relationship. So I love being a boy mum.
Yeah, no, I do love boys. I do love boys. They're mummy's boys. So I guess the first question I wanted to ask, in terms of your birth project, can you tell me why you created it and sort of give us a little bit of background about it?
Yeah, for sure. So I started Your Birth Project a couple of years ago now, and I think through recording podcast episodes on Kiwi Birth Tales, I was hearing, you know, similar sort of themes over and over again, where someone might have had a different birth experience if they had more knowledge, or if they knew that certain term, what it meant when someone was talking to them about it, or if they had more knowledge of, you know, what an induction might mean for them, or all of these things that I guess form part of birth education that just naturally through the shortage of midwives here in New Zealand and across the world, really, they don't have time to run an individual sort of antenatal type session with each client. And there's quite a mixed experience I was finding through the podcast with antenatal classes sort of in general, and the knowledge and information mums and dads were getting out of that. So I thought along that journey, and I was pregnant myself as part of that, and ended up having an emergency cesarean section for my first birth after an induction. I just thought, like, there has to be more out there that's easily accessible and taught in a way that is easy to understand, and that sort of drove my passion for it, I guess. So I did a hypnobirthing instructor qualification, and I got the expertise that I needed, and I sort of turned that into my own thing, because I found everything I was finding around hypnobirthing was so positive, but it was so directed towards someone who wanted to have, you know, a drug-free home birth, or a birth in a birth center with no drugs or interventions. And it was very much the sort of feeling of, if you have those things, then you fail in some way. And I really didn't like that sort of rhetoric around hypnobirthing that we can sometimes find. So that's what drove me to start Your Birth Project. It truly is an inclusive course. You could be planning an elective cesarean section and still use the hypnobirthing techniques in the course. And yeah, so it's all online, it's accessible anywhere, it's an accessible price point, because that was another thing I was finding when I was doing my research, like, you're paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars for these courses, and that's just not realistic for everybody. So it was important to me to sort of keep that in mind as well. But It's pretty much 4 hours of content that you can stop and start and go back to whenever you want.
So it's in like little bite-sized bits?
Yeah, correct. Yep. So it's like some videos will be a couple of minutes long. Others will be, you know, like 10 to 15 minutes, and you can access the course as many times as you like in 12 months. So it's amazing. Really, like, I don't know about you guys, but I have had major pregnancy brain. I still feel like I've got like
We feel it.
And I just didn't like, I found it really hard to retain information when I went to in-person classes. So I love the idea of being able to go back to, you know, sections of the course that I either didn't take in enough from, or I want to know more about, or I really want to focus on. So yeah, there's also a beautiful birth video at the end of the course, and some like bonus episodes from the podcast and things like that. But it's just truly an inclusive course that helps mums to have their best birth. Like, that's my goal with the course.
Yeah. Well, you've answered my next question, I guess, which isn't suitable for all births, but it is, obviously. I think I just want to say I did a hypnobirthing course online because it was in COVID. Mm. So I did that for my first birth, and I definitely have to agree that it was really geared towards natural births only. They did obviously cover inductions and other things. This was in the UK, other things, but I definitely felt afterwards I was so gung-ho, I guess, about the natural birth, I'm doing the inverted commas here, that I almost felt a little bit like a failure afterwards.
I think it's so common, right?
Yeah.
I agree. I feel like hypnobirthing, when I came out of the first pregnancy, it was something that I was like, oh, almost afraid to do again in this pregnancy, because I didn't want to, I felt like I was setting yourself up for failure or like disappointment. Whereas in my head, I don't know psychologically what this is right now, but I'm like in this point of denial where I'm like, so I'm just going to go with the flow. But I know myself, and I'm one of those people at uni that, and we were talking about this yesterday, Jess, but like we're last minute assignment sort of people. And now I'm like,
me too.
All right, I got a week till birth. I got to learn my shit. I actually do need the hypnobirthing tools. So it's really nice to know that there's an inclusive one out there. That doesn't sort of not shame you. None of them shame you openly. Yeah. But it's just sort of like you have that in the back of your mind. Like
that feeling. Like,
oh, I got the induction. I did this. And you're could I have done it differently?
I put off getting intervention, I guess, for 30 hours, which is just so dumb.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's just, I feel like there's, it's a very common sort of like theme and story. And I think I hear so many people say like, oh, I'm just going to go with the flow for my birth because, you know, you never know what will happen. And I just think like such a great mindset in terms of being like open-minded to what can happen and, you know, like what you might need in your labor and birth. But I always say like, if you were going to buy a new car, the chances are that you would do like a heap of research and like you'd ask your friends and you'd ask your family and you might even go like on your Instagram and be like, tell me the car that I can put 3 rear facing car seats across in. Like, you'd want to know all of that information. Yeah. And I think like birth is the truly one of the most unique and like transformative experiences that we'll ever have. And just deciding to be open-minded and not learn anything about it, I think like it's sort of a head in the sand like way to do it. And I understand it. I get it. But I just like, anyone I talk to, I'm like, I implore you, please, just even if it's on YouTube, go and find out a little bit more about like birth.
Well, even to give you some perspective. So, but guys, when I say I'm going with the flow, I've done 2 hypnobirthing classes in the last. I'm not completely head in the sand. I know my shit.
Yeah.
But what I did do this time is, because I had like a few issues in my last pregnancy, I researched the hell out of those and looked at like the science behind, you know, like placenta being tugged and like all these things. So I know what I definitely don't want. But anyway, let's talk about hypnobirthing. So obviously we both use elements of it, but for the listeners at home, what can you just give us a rundown of how it works?
Yeah, I think hypnobirthing is like, it's probably changed over time. And I think it's a range of things depending on where you get your information from and sort of how you choose to go about that. But the general idea is that hypnobirthing is like a range of tools or techniques that you can use in your labor and birth that aim towards helping you have a more positive experience. And the heart of hypnobirthing, and that's why, you know, we hear all of this about having a drug-free, intervention-free vaginal birth. The heart of it is around comfort methods that don't involve, you know, any medical intervention. So it's all things that you can do on your own or with your partner, and sort of focus, yeah, around avoiding that sort of medical side of birth. So it's just, yeah, the positive birth is the really key aspect there. And I just think it's knowledge, right? It's knowledge about the process of labor and birth. And I really do believe that knowledge is power when it comes to childbirth. It's comfort methods and tools, and it's not only support for your body, but support for your mind as well, which I think is just like the most important tool in childbirth. So that would probably be how I'd explain hypnobirthing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it, people don't realize, I mean, if you're really brand new to it, you think, you hear the term hypnobirthing and you think it's all a bit sort of
woo-woo. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's quite, so I was really surprised to learn how science-based the whole thing is.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, when we think hypnobirthing, we sort of think I'm going to be hypnotized, or I'm going to be in this like hypnosis state when I'm in labor and birth, and I won't remember anything, and I'm just going to be like flying with the clouds and my baby will just glide on out. Like, I think,
I mean, if only, that would be great.
Right? I would be a millionaire if that was the case, I think. But yeah, I think like the general idea around knowledge being power and sort of taking what you want from a hypnobirthing course, I think is the really important part.
Totally. Let's talk about the golden hour. We hear about it a lot. Can you kind of just explain what it is and why it's important?
Yeah. So for me, the golden hour is like the first hour after your baby is born. And it's that sort of uninterrupted, ideally, hour of time that you've got your baby on you doing skin to skin. So, you know, there's nothing between you. Your baby sort of can feel and like knows your heartbeat and get to know your smell. And it's that really bonding sort of period. Ideally, you'd have delayed cord clamping, which is not always possible depending on your birth, but it's amazing if you can do that. So skin to skin, delayed cord clamping, and that sort of first latch. So I don't know if you've ever seen a video of a baby doing like a breast crawl where they sort of like their way along to the mother's nipple, and that often happens in that first sort of golden hour as well. But I think the general principle is that you just have this like period of time that is uninterrupted, that you and your baby are just together, and like you've just given birth to this child, and you know, you're now holding them in your arms, and it's pretty incredible sort of moment. And I think
I feel so emotional now.
I know. I think like it also isn't lost, just as a side note, like in a cesarean birth, you can still achieve you know, so many different parts of that golden hour after birth in a cesarean birth as well. So yeah, I think we often see like golden hour and we think this vaginal birth, which is absolutely the case because it's not a surgery, but you can still have your baby skin to skin. You can have your baby like on you on the table when you're moved to recovery. You can do your first latch on the table, all of those different types of things. So I think that's important to remember as well.
Definitely.
And we did speak about the partners, but obviously when we say partners, we can talk about birth partners as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, the mother or father of your child. But what are some of the best ways we can incorporate our partner in the lead up to the birth and the birth process itself? And I just want to say here that I fully, like, you know how you write birth plans, and we are going to discuss that. I had that piece of paper. I don't think I used it once, but one thing I did drill into my partner leading up is like things that were just non-negotiables for me. And I thought I would still be able in birth to be like, oh no, I don't want that. I don't want that. But looking back on it, I just had no, I just couldn't say anything. Like, he actually had to advocate for me on so many occasions. I think that's something which I just want to emphasize before you answer the question.
Yeah, for sure. I think like, we probably don't emphasize enough how much of a part a birth partner plays in your actual birth experience. Like, they are the controller of your birth space from, you know,
letting people into the room, understanding what's going on. Because you're right, you're often not in the either the headspace or you're in your own world and all of the stuff is happening around you. And like sometimes truly, like I remember parts of my labor where there were people in the room talking and I literally couldn't hear what they were saying. I was just like in my own world. And your birth partner needs to be able to be your advocate during that time and, you know, really understand what's going on. And I think, sometimes it gets a little bit lost in translation, maybe how important of a role the birth partner plays in a birth. So I think there's so many different ways for us to incorporate a partner in our birth experience, but it all starts with birth education, right? Like bring them along to the courses, get them reading the same sort of books as you or listening to the same podcasts or watching a YouTube video or whatever it is that you're sort of investing your time in. It's amazing if they can do that too. And that's why I sort of designed the course. It's got a specific birth partners section. So ideally they do the whole course with you, but if they don't, or for whatever reason, there's a 15-minute video for birth partners that is basically like, here is everything you need to know as fast as I can possibly tell you to support this person during their birth. And there's so many different ways they can do that. They can learn these comfort methods that you want to try in labor and birth, and some of them might not work, and then you try something different. Or they can learn how to put the TENS machine on your back. They can learn how to do acupressure massage, or they can learn a hip squeeze. They can understand what's important to you and your birth environment, what language you're using. There's so many different things. But I think the key thing to remember, and if you're a birth partner, like listening to this podcast episode, is you have such an impact on the way that this birth experience ends up going. So I think investing your time and your knowledge into learning about birth and the process of birth and how you can best support is going to be so, so valuable. And it's like this life-changing experience that you go through together. I think there's never enough weight put on that.
Yeah.
I think definitely getting my husband to watch a few of the hypnobirthing, he probably watched them all actually. I feel like I have amnesia from the whole thing, but I know that it got him really excited, got me really excited. And then he saw that and he watched it and got really excited about the whole thing as well. So it was kind of that building up that, instead of having the anxiety around the birth, it was more excitement.
Yeah. And I think like we forget that labor and birth can be really like mentally and physically draining for the birth partner as well.
Yeah. So,
especially if it's somebody, you know, if it is your partner and you're seeing them go through this like really intense experience, it can be really draining for the birth partner as well. So having a bit of an idea about what to expect, I think like just means that they're not going in blind and they're not sort of like totally shocked by this whole experience, and they are able to be your support person and they are able to, you know, like really support you in the times that you needed and give you the positive affirmations and give you the drive you need to keep going.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the positive affirmations. They actually work.
I know. It's like I'm not a positive affirmation person. You know, I'm not like someone who can stand in the mirror and positive affirmations at myself. But during labor, it was like I just had these, you know, a few key sentences that I just was like telling myself over and over again. And sometimes that's the thing that you can like hold on to, and it does give you power. And I think it's so different, right? Childbirth is just such a different experience to anything else that you do in your life. I'm all for positive affirmations.
So I just need to, because I'm a week away and I didn't do positive affirmations. Maybe that's why something didn't happen right now. I'm joking. But can you give me one? Let's just give me two birth affirmations. Like what are your two favorites?
Yeah, I love, and I'm probably going to get them like the exact wording of them wrong, but when I was saying to myself in labor is like, my contractions are not stronger than me because they are me. Like they
are
my body.
Yes, I did that one.
Really like that one, because like sometimes they can feel so powerful and overwhelming, and it's like just brings you back to the place of like, this is my body and it's not stronger than me. Like I think that's a really nice one.
Love it.
And I really love, my body and my baby are working together. Like every contraction I'm having, my body and my baby are working together. They're doing what they need to be doing. Those are probably two of my favorites. Well, they're definitely the ones I hung on to in my labor.
All right, I've popped them on my desk, and that'll be where I'll be giving birth, so it'll be good.
Well, at your desk, great.
Well, yeah, I'll be in this room for a while, but yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Go on.
So, okay, on your Instagram, you do some stories and some reels about talking about anxieties towards birth, which is kind of what we were just talking on as well. What are the main birth anxieties that you hear from your clients? And I guess within that question, can we talk a little bit about the acronym BRAIN?
Yeah, for sure. So I think birth anxiety is really normal, right? Like, it's an experience that we've heard probably for our whole lives that is going to be so painful. And we watch movies and these women are like on their backs and they're screaming and it's this massive, like, you know, ordeal. And everything that the media or a movie or a TV series has ever portrayed about birth has been traumatic without us even sort of realizing it. So I think that gives us this innate sense of like fear when we think about giving birth. And I think the main anxieties that I talk with like my clients about is actually around the unknown and like, you know, not being able to sort of control how things happen in labor and birth, and also tearing. Like, that's such a huge one. I think if we just sit here and think about like a vaginal tear, that just the most awful thing that you can think of. But we forget that in the moment when you're actually giving birth, it's not like,
oh my God,
the majority of people who give birth, like they couldn't identify the moment that they had a tear. So I think it's like, it's very different to think about it when you're sort of just sitting there at your desk being like, oh my gosh, this is going to happen to me. And those are sort of the main anxieties that I hear about. So I guess the few key things I'd say about that is, again, the birth education and sort of knowledge is power and really understanding what you can control. So what's within your circle of control, what's, you know, in your birth environment, what language are you using, who's in the room, how are you being treated, all of those different sorts of things that you can control. And then in terms of the BRAIN acronym, I really love this one because it just gives us a tool to use to make decisions. And again, the loss of control can often lead to, and we'll talk about it soon, I think, the cascade of intervention or for whatever reason, a feeling of birth trauma after birth. So BRAIN acronym, the B stands for benefits. So if you've got a decision to make, what benefits come from the options that I'm being presented with? R stands for risks. So what's the risk assessment? What are the risks of saying yes or no to this thing that I'm being offered? A, what are the alternatives? So what other options do I have? What other things could I try? All of the different alternative options. I is for instinct, and I think we really need to put some weight onto this one. So what is your instinct telling you? What is your gut telling you about this decision that you need to make? Mother's intuition is really strong, right? And I think it's okay to lean on that in a medical sense as well. So really using your gut instinct, what is that telling you? And then N stands for nothing. So what happens if I, you know, wait another 2 hours? And I like to think of like an example around induction for this. So what happens if I wait another 2 hours before you break my waters and I go and I do some walking up and down the corridors, or I walk up and down the stairs, or I try a few different positions to move into and things like that? What happens between now and 2 hours time? If you want to break my waters, then we can talk about it again. So I think that's just a really nice tool to have in your back pocket. If you need to make a decision about anything in your labor or birth, you can sort of work through your options. And it also is a nice tool for birth partners, because if you are in that sort of other world and feel like you're, you know, not really with it or able to make the decision, like you would when you weren't giving birth, your birth partner can sort of work through this BRAIN acronym with you, and you can come to a decision together. So, yeah, I think it's a really nice one.
Did
you use it, Jess?
Yeah, I did. And I remember making it a really important thing for Matt to learn as well. So just for the reasons that you just said.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember even going on and like talking to my sister, my mum. Like, I'm one of those people that when I make a decision, I have to ask everyone's opinion. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, of course, my mum was like, Nicola, just stop. You've been laboring for too long. Just get that. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to hang up on you now because you're not helping me. Yeah. Yeah. Can we just quickly talk about birth plans? We did discuss this in another podcast with someone called Millie Poppins, and she was talking about reframing the term birth plan to birth wishes, because it's just like sometimes having a plan and it doesn't go to plan, you feel disappointed. Yeah. So how can we actually understand what we want out of our birth? I mean, you've sort of just described it then, but do you recommend in your course that people sort of write it down?
So I've got a template in the Your Birth Project course called Birth Goals, and it's sort of similar, I guess. It's the reframing of birth plan to goals. And I really like that because it's a goal around, all centered around, how do you want to feel once you've given birth to your baby? And then you sort of work back from there about the things that are important to you. And like I think you mentioned earlier, your non-negotiables. So what are the really non-negotiables that you have in your labor and birth? And then I think like thinking about, what does your dream birth look like? And it might not be, I'm in the water and I'm, you know, not using any drugs and my baby comes out and we spend the golden hour together and those types of things. It might not be that specific. It might be, I feel like I'm respected in the decisions that I make. I feel like I'm informed and able to make the decisions for myself and nobody else made them for me. I feel like I want the word surge to be used instead of contraction, and everybody in my birth team knew that, and that's the language that they use. Like, it can be things that are sort of that that simple, I guess, that can make such a huge difference in our birth. So that's sort of one side of it. And then I guess the other side of it is, okay, so here's what I want to feel like. Here's what I want my birth to look like. What are the next steps or alternatives for me? Should this happen? So it's like, okay, this happens, then what? So that's how I've structured the birth goals in Your Birth Project, because I think it just gives you, okay, this is my dream outcome. And then here's what I want to happen if things don't go totally to plan, for lack of a better word. I think it's really nice to think about the things that are important to you and the non-negotiables, rather than just saying, I'm going to go with the flow and not have a plan.
All right, let's move on to the point that's come up a couple of times, the cascade of intervention. So it's kind of always got a bit of a negative connotation to it, right? Let's put a different spin on it, I think. How can we feel empowered?
Totally. So I think like the cascade of intervention absolutely exists, and I don't think there's any point in sort of trying to talk around that, right? Like,
all three of us needed it.
100%. So the cascade of intervention, if we look at it really simply, is like a domino effect or a cascade of things that happen after the first intervention. And typically, like, you'll hear an example of, okay, I'm induced and then I'm more likely to have an epidural, and then I'm more likely to have an instrumental delivery or a cesarean birth. And that's the sort of cascade that you'll hear people talk about. I think understanding, you know, the different ways that you can be induced and what that does to your body and how you can use that to your advantage and still have the birth that you want is really important. So again, I think, and I know I've said it so many times already, but that knowledge is power is truly key to A, avoiding that cascade of intervention, but B, feeling like you're informed if it does happen, because the reality is that lots of us will need an induction. And for some of us, that will mean that we have an epidural. And then for some of us, again, that will mean we have an instrumental delivery or a C-section. And that's not a bad thing. It's
Every day is filled with opportunities to express yourself. And with an everyday piece from Blue Nile, you can do it without saying a word. Blue Nile's collection of diamond jewelry is the ultimate statement, with sparkle that elevates any outfit. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, their diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
understanding and being informed about those decisions that changes the way that we feel after.
Yeah.
I think that's really important because...
And having it as part of your decision.
Yeah. And that's the key in all of this, right, is that things don't happen to you in your labor and birth, because that's what leads to birth trauma, feeling like something has happened to you without your sort of, you know, informed consent or your informed knowledge of making that decision. And then afterwards you feel like, holy shit, what has just happened? I had no idea that that was, you know, what was going to happen. And I'm really traumatized by that, which is a very real experience. So I think ways to feel empowered from your birth process is just having that understanding of what's going on, what options you have, you know, really understanding the process of labor and birth and what having an induction actually might mean for you and how you can use that to your advantage, or what having an epidural might mean for you and how you can still remain, you know, upright and use gravity to your advantage in an epidural and things like that. So there's absolutely a need for interventions in birth sometimes, and that is a reality. But again, I think it comes back to what are your non-negotiables and how do you want to feel, and how can you use the knowledge that you have as power in your birth experience?
I'm just going to say, from my experience, I had induction, then Syntocin and epidural, and then Vontus delivery. But I did feel really informed in my decisions, and I feel like I honestly look back at my birth, even though it was like, I don't know, it felt like 3 years long, it was 40-something hours, but I feel really positive about it. And I felt like I just felt so happy afterwards, even though I didn't want to have those things. I was able to make the decision to continue to move on with them, and it really helped me. So I'm just going to put it out there, like, don't be afraid of it, you know.
I was the same, like, and I didn't have an induction. Like, this with my second birth, I had, you know, a spontaneous labor and a really long early labor stage, but I'd been in labor for like 3 days and decided to have the epidural. And then eventually I had an episiotomy, and then my baby Ali was born. And I feel like that was literally the most positive experience ever. But it was all because I was making those decisions from a place of feeling really informed. I was asking for what I wanted. I was pushing back if something didn't feel right. So I was in control of those options. And I think that's the really key thing there.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, first birth, I'm sure, or it's very different to the second, and even going into this second birth, I'm just so motivated to be not in charge, because I know there was going to be points where I'm going to be in that world where like someone else needs to take charge. But I just feel that I know so much more than what I did in my first birth. Even though I did 2 hypnobirthing classes, sometimes it's not until you experience it that you're like, whoa, okay, could have, like, maybe could have done this, or no, this time I would like to do this instead. But this brings me to my next question about interventions. What is an intervention-free version of birthing a placenta? Like, how long should it really take?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think you'll hear a lot of like birth stories. People will talk about a physiological or a managed stage, which is when you'd have, if it was managed, you'd have an injection usually of Syntocin, which is also what they use to induce labor. And it just helps your placenta to sort of come away, and then you birth it. And that should usually take like up to 30 minutes if you've had a managed placenta birth stage. If it's physiological or you don't have the injection, it can sort of take up to an hour usually, and some people will be really quick and others will take, you know, like the full hour. And usually after an hour, your care provider would start to talk about like, okay, we should maybe think about some help to help the placenta come away, because as soon as you've given birth, your uterus sort of starts contracting and doing what it should do. You want the placenta to sort of come away as part of that process, and it won't always on its own. So there sometimes absolutely is a need for a managed placenta birth stage. I think in terms of how long it should take, it's depends on your sort of care provider and their practice. But typically if it was physiological, it would take up to an hour, and if it was managed, it would take sort of, you know, up to 30 minutes.
Okay, yeah, because my placenta came out in pieces the first time, And I and then went into surge and everything. But this time it's like one thing that I'm really set on. Because I sort of question why. I do remember there being a little bit of tugging and I don't know what point there was. And I just have this thing where I want to be able to like birth my placenta naturally for a little bit, physiologically. Mm. And so I voiced that with my obstetrician. He was like, yep, I'm happy to do that. Just because the hemorrhage risk, like we'll leave you for half an hour and then we'll just start prepping you for surgery at half an hour. Yeah. But by the time we get to the end of that, like you'll have a whole hour.
Yeah. So, prepping you for surgery.
Well, just in case. Well, because if I'm, because apparently if you've had retained placentas previously, like
you're okay.
Another one. So if it doesn't come out after like an hour, then I mean, I don't know much about it, but I just know that I want to give myself the opportunity. And that was like another birth wish, which I just feel like placenta, it was one thing that I didn't really focus on. But then it became this like obsession afterwards. Like I didn't get to see my placenta. That was like something that was kind of now like more important to me in the second birth.
People like forget that sometimes. Like I've hosted podcast guests who were like, I had no idea I had to give birth to the placenta after the baby was born. They sort of just like assumed that it all came out in one, right?
Another big question, what can we sort of expect from each stage of birth and what are the different stages of birth?
Yeah, so I think, and I talk about this quite in depth in the course because I think it's really important to understand the different stages of birth and be able to sort of identify them. Like I talk about it on my Instagram as well because it's good for the person giving birth but also the birth partner to sort of be able to identify where you might be up to in these stages. So I refer to it as early labor, and that's when, you know, your labor sort of starts and you might have some tightening and some aches and it'll feel, you know, like a bit different to Braxton Hicks if you've been having those. Usually your contractions would be irregular. They sometimes might be more regular and then like slow down. And if you're like me and your body wants to be in early labor for a long time, then you can sometimes have that like for days. It's not always something that sort of lasts like, you know, a couple of hours and then moves on. So early labor is your body sort of really starting to prepare and doing what it sort of should be doing. And yeah, that can change in terms of length depending on the person. And as you sort of get to that end of the early labor stage, you sort of start to notice that things get a little bit more intense and they might become a little bit more regular. Your tightenings will be more obvious than maybe what they were at the start, and you might feel like some changes in your body slowly start to happen. So that's the first stage. And then you come to active labor, which is when you're really having to give in to your contractions, and it's not something that you're just able to sort of talk through or you know, just go about your day with what like you might have been able to do in early labor. So your contractions will really require your attention and your breathing and your focus. You might be like swaying through them, or you'll be using the comfort methods that you've chosen to try. It's a great time to use your TENS machine if you're trying that. But all of the comfort methods that you've been sort of talking about with your birth partner would be your go-to during active labor. And again, it sort of has two stages, like an early and a late stage of active labor, where you might be just starting to come into active labor and your contractions are like really manageable but definitely regular and you're giving your attention to them, versus the end stage of active labor where you're really having to like focus and breathe and do everything you can to sort of move through that wave of contraction when it comes. And then you'll get to transition. And I'm really passionate about talking about this a lot because, again, through the podcast, I hear these stories of people who felt like an associated birth trauma afterwards because they get to this transition stage and everything feels really overwhelming. A lot of people will say, like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I just want to go home. Get me the hell out of here. During transition, you get this rush of adrenaline. And if you've been in quite like a sleepy or a – not sleepy, but if you've been in quite a, you know, manageable state through your labor so far, transition can feel like, holy shit, what the hell is happening to me? And can be that feeling of, like, losing control. So I think it's important to – know that this is such a normal stage that you're moving through. And it is absolutely part, like a normal part of labor and birth. So yeah, you'll notice that transition phase. Sometimes people will like vomit. It's a really normal thing to happen in transition. Some people get the shakes, like it's all normal and it's all driven by that sort of adrenaline rush and your body getting ready to give birth.
The shakes, so that's the sort of know about, and I'm glad that you said that. I got the shakes and I was like, oh shit, my body's breaking down.
Something's wrong with me. And that's like, oh, honestly, you guys, I could talk about this forever. I think like that point as well, we can get really fearful and we're like, something's wrong with me. I've got the shakes, or I'm vomiting, or my body's telling me I need to go home. Like, that's my gut instinct telling me something's wrong. And it is, again, driven by that sort of adrenaline rush. But being able to identify that is important, because otherwise you get into the cycle of fear, tension, and pain, which is just like not something that you want in that part of your birth. You don't want to be feeling really tense and therefore contributing to sort of that pain cycle. You want to be able to give in to that sort of feeling as much as you possibly can. So knowing that it's coming and being able to identify it, and it won't be as intense for everybody, you know, like obviously everybody has such different births, but just knowing that, okay, this is transition and this is really normal and it means I'm going to meet my baby soon is a really key piece of information, I think, when it comes to labor and birth.
Yeah.
And then you will be, you'll likely get to 10 centimeters. And this is when, if you don't have an epidural, for example, you might get this involuntary sort of feeling of your body actually pushing without you having much control over it. And not everybody will have that without an epidural, but you can do. So the stage after transition is when your baby's all the way in the birth canal and, you know, getting ready to be born, and you've got these really intense contractions, like bringing your baby down, and you would usually be starting to push like sometime after that, and you might get this really intense urge to poo. And you might feel like a heap of pressure. And I posted a video on TikTok yesterday of a lady after she'd given birth, and she said, oh my God, my fanny's on fire, or something like that. And and all of these people were commenting. And this one lady said, I remember vividly saying in my labor, I feel like my butthole is going to fall out. Like, that's how intense it felt. And I think like all of these things are really normal. That, and really intense pressure in your bum is really normal when you're giving birth. So that's the sort of next stage when you'd be pushing your baby out. Sometimes, like I said, it will be this involuntary thing where your body sort of takes over and is sort of pushing for you. And other times it'll be a really conscious need for you to drive that pushing. And I always say to my clients, push like you're doing the biggest poo you've ever done in your whole life.
Yeah, I have to say that did help me.
That
really helped me figure out where I was pushing.
And you have to get really angry. It's not like a polite push.
No. You know when, can I say, you know when you're pushing and the nurses or the OB, they'll be like, no, stop. Mm. Like you have the urge to push, but then they're telling you to stop pushing. Why are they telling you to stop pushing? Is it because of like, I mean, obviously it could be multiple reasons, like the cord or whatever, but does it have to be, do you have to push when you're contracting? Is that right? Or
what? Yeah. So usually you would be pushing on a contraction because it means that you're working with your body, but also your care provider will often be trying to avoid a tear. So they might be like sort of seeing your baby's head crown, and they can sort of identify the moment where you need to just sort of slow down and allow your body to really stretch. And that can be the hardest part, I think, is when you've got all of this pressure and you just really want to just push this whole baby out right now. Allowing your body the time to sort of stretch is really important. So listening to them, if you can, like, you know, if you've got that involuntary pushing sensation, then you're not always going to be able to stop. But if you can, sometimes the coaching from them can be really helpful. So you've given birth, and then you would be working through the birth of the placenta, and then you're sort of, you know, that sort of golden hour that we've already touched on would happen. And so those are the sort of stages of birth very quickly.
Moving on, I guess, into the after stage. You have spoken to so many women about their birth experience. So, okay. Snacks, I find very important. I think especially because we grew up believing that you can't eat in the whole process.
Isn't that weird?
Bizarre. For my first birth, I packed basically a kilo of dried mango. Didn't eat it, but I just thought that's what I would want. But have you found that there's like a snack that people gravitate towards? And then also I'm going to join the questions up. Is there like, what are some of the things that people, like products or things that people have loved in their postpartum, in the hospital stay?
So I think snacks, things that are easy to eat and easy to access, like, you know, a piece of fruit or a banana or like an energy ball or a bliss ball or something like that. Little things that are easy to eat that aren't going to take you too long, I think are really important, because it's so bizarre that we think we can't eat during labor and birth, and you often won't feel like eating, but it is important to keep your energy levels up. So even
bliss
if it's like
a great one.
Yeah, bliss balls are really good. Or if your partner's at home, if you guys are at home, get them to make you a smoothie or something like that, you know. It's just so that you're getting your energy levels restored. And if you're up during the night with labor, like things like that, you really want to keep your energy levels going. So, you know, nuts or a spoon of peanut butter, like anything like that is going to be really really helpful. And I think the one thing I will never forget my midwife telling me in my second birth was dehydration is one of the biggest reasons why your labor will slow down or stop progressing.
Oh, interesting.
So we forget to drink. We forget, like, in the moment how important it is to drink water or, you know, an electrolyte drink. There's so many different options that are made for mums now as well, which I love. So staying hydrated in labor is just as important, if not more important, than eating. So I think those are probably my key ones for that. And then in terms of what you can pack or like things you can use for postpartum, I've got a postpartum toolkit on my website, and I just have really been like very careful about what I've included in there to make sure that it's things that mums would really use, and all based on like my experience and mums from the podcast and what they've used. So in there is the holy grail of postpartum recovery, in my opinion, and that is adult disposable nappies. I don't know if either of you used them after your birth experiences, but I found maternity pads just like so big and chunky and uncomfortable. I also remember getting like almost like chafing from the wings of maternity pads because they're so big. And
that's what I have now. That is what I have now.
It's awful.
So bad. And, so bad.
So I found adult disposable nappies, and I've got the Partum Panties brand in my store, which is actually a beautiful Australian brand. They are amazing because you can just wear them on their own, or you can put your pad into them and wear them like you would a pair of underwear, and you don't have to worry about like bleeding anywhere or any leakage. And you can just, you know, use – I wore them for weeks after I gave birth because I just found them so much more comfortable than underwear and pads.
Interesting. I didn't use them.
I would so recommend it. Like, I'm such a fan.
Yeah, I think I will. When I had Matilda, which I think I must probably say this every episode, everyone's sick of me saying this, was in London. And, yeah, it's just everyone that I would see talking about these would say they were so tight on their legs and they always had to cut them.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the different brands, you know, from there to here, if it makes a difference. I'm going to get them here.
Yeah, definitely give them a go.
Yeah, I packed a pair I've packed a whole thing of them for birth because, I also got recommended. I used them and then I only packed one. I don't even know why I packed one, thinking that the hospital would have them. And then I got there and they're like, oh, here's some pads. And you're exactly right. The pads just, just would not, like, they chafed. It was just not.
They move around, I guess. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think the Depends brands have a wider range of sizing as well.
That's
so,
right here.
If you're finding like you want to have a bit more room in the leg, they've definitely got some more generous size options.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's really good.
And then my next One would be a peri-wash bottle, and like you can literally just use a mini pump bottle if you want to, but there are peri-wash bottles that are specific for postpartum, and you just fill them with some warm water. And if you've got like a I love the Viva La Vulva healing spray. If you just put a couple of drops of that into the peri-wash bottle, it's like, yeah, it just helps with everything postpartum when you're going to the toilet. So if you're weeing, it can be really stingy if you've had a vaginal birth. So that's definitely those two things I think were really key to pack in a hospital bag. And I love Ural. So, you know, Ural that you use when you get a bladder infection?
That
helps with the pH levels of your urine. So drinking that in your drink bottle post-birth can just help with the stinginess that you can feel.
That is the best tip I have heard so far. Whole 8 months of me being pregnant.
Yeah.
That is such a good idea because it's something that is petrifying in your mind thinking about having to go to the toilet.
Yeah,
it does sting.
Chuck some Ural in your drink bottle. It's it's a good one.
Great idea. Then
the other one I have in the toolkit is actually Kiwi Crush. So it's a digestive support because nobody wants to be like straining to push a poo out after you've just pushed a baby out, right? So just drink it. It's like a sachet. You just put it into your water as well. And it means that you're getting more water in too. So those are my sort of things that I've got in the postpartum toolkit that I think are really helpful for a vaginal, particularly a vaginal birth delivery. And then if you were having a cesarean section, I think the adult nappies are still my go-to because they're high-waisted, so they're not going to like rub on your scar or your incision site at all. Lots of loose, comfortable clothing. I think sometimes people don't realize that it actually takes quite a while for your belly to start to go down. And so you're still like pregnant afterwards. So you need to bring like comfortable clothing that you're going to feel, you know, really good in and comfortable in, and you're not sort of worried about anything being too tight. Breastfeeding bras. I love, love, love the Silverette cups. I don't know if either of you have heard of those.
I've heard of them. I haven't used them.
Yeah.
So I used them after my second birth, and I had like a huge crack on my nipple because when I first latched Ali, he wasn't on properly, and I didn't realize because I didn't breastfeed long with Jai. And the Silverette cups were like the holy grail of healing for my nipples.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely would recommend giving those a go. And those would probably be, my key things. I think it's nice to have some comforts from home, like whether it's a pillow that you love or your slippers or your favorite toiletries, like that post-birth shower. I don't think anything can beat that feeling.
Nicola's already waiting for us.
Sometimes it can be really nice to have like, you know, some new body wash or like all of your favorite skincare or like your favorite smelling shampoo and conditioner, whatever it is. Those little things from home can make a really nice difference just after you've given birth.
Yeah, I have to say that is my number one thing that I look forward to in birth. So my first birth, I didn't actually pack anything special, but my mum rocked up at the hospital with, I don't know if you're familiar with the brand Aesop.
Jordan. I love them.
She bought me a whole pack. Like we're talking, it would have been very expensive. So I was super grateful. And
are you listening to this?
And I was like, thinking nothing of it. I got into my room and I literally spent like every break I had from breastfeeding. I was moisturizing my legs. I was putting a facial mask on, and the smell, like it just made me feel like I was in a spa, and it was a game changer. Yeah. So this time I've packed a whole box of it, and I haven't opened any of them, and it's like just for when I've given birth.
Little treat.
And also like I got some for my partner as well, so we'll both share it. So it's like a both, you know, little spa experience for us.
Cute. Nice. That's very cute.
Okay, so we only really have time for two more questions. But the first one, I was just talking, we wanted to talk about birth stories and obviously it's something very close to your heart because you have a whole podcast on it, but what are your thoughts on, you know, people listening to birth stories before they've given birth for the first time? You know, should they all be positive? I know, Jess, you're very anti, like, listening to
negative. I was. And that was from my first hypnobirthing course, which was like, do not listen to anything, only listen to our birth stories. And I followed it to a T, but I definitely think I should have been more informed on what could have gone wrong.
Because I'm more of a, I prefer listening to like where something, the intervention, things that go wrong, just so I know, like I'm aware of like how that person felt afterwards, what they would have done differently. That's just my, I like listening to a range. Like I love positive ones too. But what are your thoughts, Jordan, like as someone who has a course?
I think it depends, right, like on the type of person that you are. If you know that you can listen to an episode, and that's why I'm very clear in like the title of the Kiwi Birth Tales episodes, because I want people to know like what they're going to find in the episode. If you're the type of person who can listen to a story where someone has experienced birth trauma and for whatever reason that might be, and they've found their birth, you know, something that was really traumatic for them. If you can listen to that episode and, you know, put it in a box, take the knowledge out that you want from it and sort of go, okay, here's what I learned from that. So here's what I'm going to take with me into my birth that I want to try and like implement or use to avoid that happening, then amazing. Listen to all the stories, take what you want from them. Knowledge is power again. But if you're not that type of person and you would listen to that episode and go, holy shit, that is going to happen to me. And there's nothing I can do about it. And now I'm feeling really anxious and I'm in the cycle of only being able to think about that traumatic thing happening to me. Definitely avoid them. So I think like being self-aware enough to know what type of category you fall into is probably like pretty important. I definitely believe that like knowledge, you're just going to get like a range of experiences from listening to birth stories. You can fast forward through parts if they're not like what you want to hear about, but taking those experiences and using them in the way that you want to can be so powerful. And just, you know, sometimes postpartum can feel so isolating and like you're the only one who's ever gone through these things. But if you've got a range of stories that you've heard before, more than likely you're going to be able to identify with one of them and go, oh, I remember, you know, Jess talking about that in her episode. And I might go back and listen to that now because I've experienced it and I want to hear it again and like understand how she felt. And is that how I'm feeling? Can just create that feeling of like community or like you're just not as isolated or alone, which I think is really important.
Totally. Yeah, and that is kind of what I was going to talk about. The next question on postpartum recovery. Do you know what? The biggest thing that got to me in the postpartum was as soon as it hit nighttime, I would have a bit of a mental breakdown for a while.
Same. I remember that.
It was like an absolute fear. Knowing that
I hated the nighttime.
That anxiety as well, like of how many times am I going to be awake tonight? And like, what kind of night are we going to have? And am I going to feel even more exhausted tomorrow? And like that sort of cycle that we can get into.
Is it different the second time around or was it for you?
It totally was for me. It's just like, you've had a baby before, you know.
You know, like you've been up with a toddler, even. You know, like you know, Nicola, not isolating anymore.
Poor Nicola, she's always up all night.
Oh God, me too.
How are you?
But I feel like you just know that everything is a season, and like it doesn't make it easier, but it just gives you some kind of like solidarity kind of feeling that like you will get through it. And I also felt, and I'm sure everybody's experience is different, right, but I felt like I was so much more confident in what I was doing and I was so much more able to make decisions without second guessing myself because I had had a baby before and I knew what this was like. And although they were really different babies, I just felt like I was able to try things and, be more confident in that. And I think that's why I really enjoyed my second postpartum period, was because I just really surrendered to that and, like, gave myself over to that really newborn phase and just allowed it to be what it would be, even though we had a toddler running around, just like adds a different element to it. But yeah, I think it can be just so isolating, the postpartum period. And
it can.
One of my like things that I always say to people is like, if somebody's asking like, what gift can we get you for your postpartum period, or like, you know, we want to do something for you, if you've got a group of friends that can pull some money together and buy you some AirPods, I reckon it is such an amazing gift to receive postpartum, because you can chuck your AirPods in and like listen to a podcast episode or watch an episode of something on Netflix, or listen to a meditation, or listen to an audiobook, or whatever it is that you're into while you're up in the night with your baby. And sometimes just hearing somebody else's voice is so reassuring, particularly if you've got a husband who's asleep. I found like I was listening to the widest range of podcast episodes that you can like ever imagine. I would go from like pop culture to motherhood to like news and like what was going on in the world. It was just totally random, but it was just nice to have somebody else's voice like there.
Completely.
I don't recommend reading one about like a young girl who's like got a really intense sex life. I started doing that one and I was like, well, this is just not me. Very like specific. It's so far from this. And it makes you feel even more depressed. So yeah, don't just steer away from those.
Yeah, books. Steer away from the romance.
You all have no sex drive, really.
I just wanted to ask one more question about the postpartum recovery with your birth project. So how, like, what part of the, or do you have a part of the course that supports the postpartum recovery?
So there definitely is a small part of the course that's around around postpartum, and it's more focused on the sort of really early days of postpartum and, you know, your feeding journey and like things to look out for and stuff like that. So there's been a slight development from that with the Your Birth Project journal, with some really you know, specific postpartum related topics and like reflections and things like that, because I think it's probably, we spend a lot of time thinking about the birth and not a lot of time planning for postpartum, but we're in postpartum for much longer than we are in birth. So it's definitely one of the things coming to the course this year is a really focused and specific postpartum recovery and postpartum support part of the course, because I've got a re-recording coming probably like mid-year that'll have heaps more content for the course, which is amazing. I'm so excited to do that. But right now it's pretty specific to those first sort of couple of weeks after birth, and supporting you through that is what is in the course at the moment.
All right, amazing. Before we head off, can you please tell our listeners where they can find you?
Sure. So I am on Instagram at Your Birth Project, or you can find me, the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast is at Kiwi Birth Tales, and it's T-A-L-E-S, or you can head to my website, www.yourbirthproject.com.
Cool. Thank you. And just, I wanted to say quickly, I know you do a lot of, you're starting to do in-person now as well, but obviously this course is available to anyone worldwide because it's online.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Jordan. We really appreciate your time today. And no, we look forward to hopefully speaking to you when you launch your postpartum
amazing
section of your course. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, guys, thanks again for listening. As always, we release episodes every Tuesday. And if you do like this podcast, then please rate or review it. And we will see you in our next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.